Hi, my name is Issa. I'm a food addict from Western Massachusetts. Just to get my stats out of the way, I am 41. I came into the rooms of OA when I was 23. My current abstinence is 8 years of back-to-back abstinence. I never left the rooms of OA, so I've really been in OA for 17, almost 18 years, right? No, 16, almost 17 years. It's 2020. And I maintain about a 100-pound weight loss at this point in my life. I have been in AA meetings, and I hear people talk about, you know, oh, this father died or, you know, of drunk driving, and this one died of kidney failure or liver disease. In my family of origin, there's a lot of addiction. There's a lot of food addiction too. My mom is morbidly obese. She has been my whole life, as far as I can remember. She was a very, very large woman. And she was like the only large woman I felt like. I felt like I had the only morbidly obese mom around, but that's not true. But she struggled with her weight my whole entire life. My grandfather on my dad's side of the family was also morbidly obese. He actually died from this disease. He choked on peanut butter, which is a really sad way to go, but I can identify with that as peanut butter is a trigger binge food for me. You know, there's just a lot of disordered eating sprinkled around my family. And if they're not food addicts, they're probably alcoholics or drug addicts, or my brother's a drug addict. My brother's a heroin addict, or they're flaming codependents. You know, my family runs the gamut. So I believe in this disease as being something that I was born with, like a nature, like it's in my DNA. But I also believe that some people become food addicts through nurture. And I had a little bit of both, or a lot of bit of both. Like I said, there's a lot in my family. So genetics-wise, I think I was a little predispositioned to be an addict of some sort. Just happens to be food for me is my primary addiction. I got other ones too. But I also grew up in a pretty tumultuous household. Like I mentioned, my mom is a food addict. She was very morbidly obese. She is very morbidly obese, and she was angry a lot. She had a lot of anger issues, and I was very scared of her. I always felt like I was walking on eggshells, and I just wanted her to please her. And she was scary. Like, I didn't know, you know, if she was going to be like the loving mommy or like the scary mommy. But my earliest memories are around food. You know, I'm 3 and we're baking cookies. It's Christmas time. And I just want her to leave the kitchen so that I can run, you know, over to the table and get as much cookie dough into me and just shove it down. And my memories just go on and on. Like, I remember events, but I can specifically remember the food that was served. Girl Scout camping trips, like peanut butter balls. Oh, I remember those. And I remember too, like, this weird feeling around food where somebody would say, you know, how many do you want? Like, if they were serving cookies or something, and I would say, I want more. Like, I couldn't put a number on it. I just wanted more. I can also remember as a little kid just kind of looking around the table and noticing everything, but around food, noticing that people weren't eating as much as me, or noticing when they would not finish a cupcake or something, you know, like they just, or like not eat the icing because it was too sweet. And like, that was just so foreign to me, like, too sweet, really? What? Like, how could you not eat the icing? Like, if they weren't looking, I might have eaten their icing, you know? I also remember getting obsessed with bodies very early on. I think I was 4 or 5 and I was playing, we were playing house, and a little boy came up to me and said, you can't be the mommy. You're too fat to be the mommy. I mean, I look back at myself and I was 4 and I wasn't very fat. I was tall though. I was a, you know, very tall girl already pretty young. I'm not super tall now. I'm about 5'8", but I'm a little bit taller, but I got tall early. But again, I was big, but I wasn't chubby, but I felt huge. I felt like this ogre, my whole childhood. I also can remember just looking at the other little girls and just thinking, like, wow, their bodies, like, they're so thin and their stomachs are so flat. And, you know, I'm so like chubby. And I have very curly hair, and my mom would cut it really short. And I just remember thinking, like, I want long, straight, blonde hair. I'm also like brunette. So I wanted to be somebody very different. I had a really weird relationship with food growing up. I was a latchkey kid. I'm trying to remember when it started. I want to say I was like 7 or 8 that I would come home and I would be by myself and I would just concoct the weirdest things. You know, I would take Bisquick mix or whatever and, you know, just make huge biscuits and eat half of it raw and take just mainline butter, sugar, flour, and just mix it together, eat that up. My mom had this huge snack cart and I would just binge my brains out on it. And I started to really put on weight though around like 7 or 8, like 2nd and 3rd grade is when I got bigger than the rest of the kids. I remember when I was 8, I was 80 pounds and we were doing like a weigh-in because I played softball, that's right. And we would have, or maybe we just weighed ourselves for school. I don't know, but I remember they would yell our weight out. I pray to God they do not do that now. Again, this was like probably 30-ish years ago. But they would yell our weight out and I was just so mortified that like I was in my 80s and everybody else was like in their 50s and 60s, their weights. By 5th and 6th grade, I wasn't fitting in kids' clothes anymore. My mom had to buy me like, I swear to God, it was like a size 12 or something, adult pants, maybe even 14. And I was sporty. Like I would, you know, play softball and basketball. But I was just starting to really pack on the pounds and, you know, nobody was really saying anything in my family to me, but I felt huge. I take that back. My grandma on my mom's side, my mom's mom, she would every summer offer to pay me to lose weight. Like, you know, if I lost a pound, she'd give me $1 for every pound I lost. And that was the thing too. Now that I think about it, every single summer, I was like, this is going to be my year. I'm going to lose all this weight. And I'm going to come back in September and be the most beautiful, hottest thing. And I'm going to get all the boyfriends and be the popular girl. And that just never, ever happened. I would wake up like on June 15th or whenever school got out and I would, you know, I'm going to exercise today. And I swear by breakfast, I was just setting myself up for failure because I am addicted to flour and sugar. I am definitely, those are trigger foods for me. They are not on my food plan. And I would probably have like pancakes for breakfast and like, whoop, I'm like off and running. Once I start to eat, put those things, those substances in my body, there's no telling when I will stop. But I would eat those things and I'm like, I'm going to go for a run. And then by like 10 or 11 o'clock, I'm binging on candy and whatever else I can get my hands on. High school was tough being an obese person. You know, I had to have a special dress made for me for chorus. There were no tennis uniforms that fit me. I had to wear like different shorts. Then they finally did get me a skirt that fit me. And softball, oh my God, it was the worst. I was out the day that they handed out uniforms and they handed me a size small and I was like a large, extra large. I was definitely like probably a 2XL at that point. And I was a pitcher and every time I would pitch, my shirt would pop up and my belly would stick out and it was just the worst. I remember for proms, I had to have my dresses made special. I couldn't shop in the normal stores at that time. I was definitely shopping in Lane Bryant. And back when I was shopping there, it was not cool. Like I can tell that they've gotten very stylish now, but back in the day, it was not stylish. I was basically wearing like my grandma's clothes. And God, I would have done anything to be thin. I would have done anything to be thin. I would dream about, this is so horrible to admit, but I would dream about like getting cancer or some other disease and or going in a coma. And like then I would get skinny and wake up and everything would be better and my life would be better. And it just, that never happened, thank God. But I also remember at an early age just thinking like I'm never going to be normal. I'm never going to get better. Because I watched my mom just go through everything to try to get thin and never have success. All of the commercial diet plans. She even had gastric bypass surgery. That was more recent. But she'd get like these really bad like vein problems. She had to have all the veins of her leg stripped out. She eventually, because of type 2 diabetes, had a portion of her leg removed. But I would just watch her struggle and struggle and struggle and think, there's no hope for me. And so college was just four more years. And in college, I got into other stuff too. Actually, in high school, I got into other stuff and drinking and drugs. I loved pot in particular because everybody would binge with me. You know, we'd all get the munchies and wow, everybody's eating just like me for the first time in my life. And even then, I would like binge afterwards. You know, I would go to like the Quick Mart and just get gobs and bags and stuff. And college was, there was fun parts, but for the most part, I really was just, you know, not living my best life. I was just feeling like I just wanted to be thin. Again, I would do anything to be normal, quote unquote normal. I was in a really big mess at that point when I graduated college. And I remember my roommate and I were watching an Oprah show, and there was a woman on the show, and she was like, I just woke up one day and I got on the scale and I was 250 pounds. I remember thinking, like, who does that? Like, how does that happen? And I got on the scale the next day and I was 242 pounds. And that's the highest recorded weight that I know of. I definitely got bigger, but, I graduated. I was able to graduate. I was always like, I was smart enough that I didn't have to do a lot of work, and just, I was able to just manipulate my teachers too. And I got out, graduated. I spent a year in the town that I went to school with, but I wasn't really thriving. I was bartending. I was sleeping with this roommate that I had who he was a bartender too. And he was a total alcoholic, drank a case of beer a day. He was what he was. I got into a ton of debt, and eventually I moved home, and I was living in my parents' basement, and I was so depressed. I was about 22 years old, 21. My brother, like I mentioned, was a heroin addict. He was at my parents' house too. He was a real mess. And him being a heroin addict made it so much easier for me to think that I didn't have a problem. Well, I'm not as bad as him, you know? And what they say is, like, if you point one finger at somebody else, you have three fingers pointing back at yourself. My debt got me, you know, I was just maxing out credit cards, not facing that reality. And that's what really scared me, is that I started to feel like food isn't strong enough. Like, I need a stronger drug. I want to totally just zone out like my brother does on heroin. And that's what really scared me. So, what got me into the rooms? Okay. So this is a kind of funny story. I had this friend who, we would party with. And when I say party, is that my friends and I, we would get high, but he never got high. He would always drink a lot of Mountain Dew and smoke a lot of cigarettes, but he never used drugs. And I didn't know much about him, but he was kind of wild. And he had all these really hot friends, like really, really hot friends. And for me, the hot friends were like, they had piercings and tattoos and they dressed really badass. And I'd go bowling with him and his friends every Thursday night. And I was like, Matt, how do you know all these guys? Cause none of them like would smoke pot too. And he's like, oh, he's like, I'm an NA. Like I used to, you know, be a crackhead. He's like, I go to these NA meetings. And I decided to go to an NA meeting with him for two reasons. One, to help my brother, and two, to meet these guys. And I don't suggest dating in NA. I just want to say, I don't think that that's the right place to go if you're like looking to date people. Not to say that there's not amazing people there, but really, if that's your purpose, don't go to NA. And so I went to that meeting, and there was something there, something pulled me there. And I want to say it's like God, it's my higher power. But again, I would go week after week, I think I was like judging them too. Like, oh, they're awful. I can't believe what awful things they're doing. At least I've never gone to prison. And then they have, you know, in their preambles and their beginning statements, they say, one is too many, 1,000 is never enough. And I went, cupcakes. And something clicked in me. And I looked at my friend in NA and I was like, Matt, like, you know, what if, is there a, there should, or no, I remember what I said. I said, hold on one second. I just want to make sure this is still recording. Oh, it is. I said, you know, there should really be a program for people who use food the way that you guys use drugs. And he looked at me and he's like I invented OA at that point. And he looked at me and he goes, no, Issa, he's like, there is a program like that. It's called OA. And I was like, how did you not tell me this? Like, look at me, I'm 250 something pounds. Like, how did you not like tell me this from day one? I'd been going to this meeting for like 6 months at this point. So I went home, I went online, I found a meeting that was near me. It met 2 days later on a Saturday. I went to it. I was 23. I was the youngest person by probably 20 years, if not more. But I have to admit, I knew that I was in the right place within 15 minutes. Again, I was much younger than everybody, but I heard people talking about food and their bodies and their emotions and the way they process things and felt about food. And they spoke with such honesty and integrity and authenticity. And I knew that I was home. I knew that I was in the right place. But I also thought they were a little crazy. I was like, they don't, you know, at least in the meeting I went to, they, you know, weighed and measured their food and they didn't eat flour and sugar. And I heard some people talking about not drinking. And I was like, dude, I'm finally legally able to drink. Like, I'm not giving that up. But I kept going. And then I found another meeting that I went to on Thursday nights. And again, I would go every week to that meeting. And you know, I would sometimes think about the food plan and I would go late and I would leave early. I didn't really want to talk to anybody because again, I was so much younger and I just thought it was a little bit insane, but also something kept dragging me back week after week. I just kept going. And then finally in the Thursday meeting, there was this woman who I thought she was in her 30s. And she was just beautiful. And she had a nice car and a boyfriend and a great job. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to start doing OA for real. Like I'll get a sponsor and a food plan when I'm 30. That was my plan. So I found out that this girl was a year younger than me. She was like 22 or 23. And I was maybe 24 at the time. And I'm very competitive. And I was like, if Eliza is doing it, like I'm going to do it. So I actually asked her to be my sponsor because she had what I wanted, you know. And at the time, there's a saying about OA, like come for the vanity, stay for the sanity. And I came for the vanity. I just wanted to be thin and get out of debt, get the nice car, get the nice job. And so I asked her to be my sponsor and she was like, you know, go to the store, get yourself a digital scale, call me at 6 a.m. You know, I'm going to give you a food plan. And so that's how OA started for me. It was, I personally was attracted to like a very strict program. Some people are more like three meals, nothing in between. Some people don't weigh and measure. That can be triggering for some people. But for me, I like really strong boundaries around my food. And I needed somebody who was kind of like going to kick my butt a little bit. I needed that discipline. I needed that drill sergeant. And so I lost a ton of weight. I lost about 100 pounds. And I can remember walking into the Express. It's a store by us in the Northeast. I don't know if it's everywhere. But, you know, it's one of those stores that I would walk by in the mall and never even attempt to go in. And I walked into one and I put on either a size 6 or 8, something, whatever it was. And it fit. And I was just like, oh, my God. Like it was just like a total miracle. And the crazy part too, like I've mentioned, I exercise, but I wasn't even exercising to lose that 100 pounds. Like I was walking here and there, but it was really just the food plan. And I worked the heck out of the tools. I made my 3 phone calls every single day, if not more. I got to 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 meetings a week, if not more. Sometimes I went to twice. I did go to other fellowships, so that made it easier because I also was told to give up the pot that I was smoking all the time. So, you know, I found a lot of friends in NA and that was like, you know, good for me because there was like a younger crowd there too. Because in OA, it was, again, mostly when I was there, it was mostly like 40-year-old women. I did find a friend or two who were my age. But it was nice to have, you know, a sober fellowship to hang out with on the weekends and do like fun young kid stuff. But my life just blossomed. You know, I got out of debt. I moved into my own apartment. I got a great boyfriend at the time, although he dumped me. That's a whole nother story. But all these miraculous things happened. But what I can tell you is that I didn't really work the steps. And eventually I went into a relapse, you know, a couple, maybe a year or two after losing all that weight, I started to gain the weight back slowly, because that's the thing about OA. It's not just a food plan. It's not just support meetings. It's not just a sponsor. It's steps. There's real step work to do to enlarge our spiritual lives. And don't get me wrong. The tools, the food plan that I was on, the meetings are amazing. But I also needed to work the steps in some way, shape, or form. And that can come through the form of literature. There's so many varieties. Just like there's so many varieties of food plan and versions of OA, there's many varieties of ways to work the steps. And so I was in a little bit of a relapse for, I call it a half relapse, because I did gain back about 50 pounds. I was exercising a lot, but I never left OA. I kept going to meetings, but I was a little bit miserable. And so I eventually moved up to Western Massachusetts. I did get married. I found God, thank you, God. Even in my relapse, I found an amazing man who I was not attracted to, who has no piercings, who has never touched drugs ever. I think he smoked pot once in Amsterdam where it was legal. But he is exactly what I needed. He is like my weighed and measured food. He's not my hot fudge sundae. But hot fudge sundaes, you know, they were never good for me. They were never good for me. But he is so solid. And we moved up to Western Massachusetts, and I went to a meeting, and it was a different variety of OA. It's called 90-day OA. And it's a very, you know, again, strict food plan. I had kind of moved away from the strict food plan. But I found people who had what I wanted. I was about 30 when we moved up here. They were, you know, thin, but more than that, they were really happy. It seemed like happy is not the right word, but like peaceful and at ease and spiritually fit. And, you know, so it took me a couple months. I found a person who had what I wanted, and I asked them to sponsor me. And that's a real key, is find somebody who has what you want and ask them what they're doing. You know, and that can be their food plan. That can be the meetings they go to. And for this sponsor too, it was the way that she was working the steps. And so in OA, you know, I've had so many amazing moments and hard moments too. Again, you know, my brother's still a heroin addict. I love him. We have a strained relationship, but I try. My mom and my dad, they're wonderful. You know, we've had our ups and downs, but it's been mostly been ups lately. And again, that's because of OA. That's because of my abstinence. That's because of the steps that I've worked. I have a daughter now. I have a 2.5, almost 3-year-old daughter. That's a miracle. That's a huge miracle. And I, you know, I lost a pregnancy. I lost two pregnancies, one at 25 weeks. And thank God for OA that I didn't eat through that. And I was able to process it and feel those feelings. I don't have any regrets. I mean, sometimes when I fantasize that I got into OA much earlier, you know, and got to live, especially during college. Like I got to live during high school. To be abstinent in high school would have been so amazing. My sponsor actually did get abstinent in high school. I think she was 16 or 17. And, you know, but again, I have no regrets. My life is so beautiful how it is today. You know, it took a lot to get me to where I am. And I am just so grateful for the opportunity to be of service and to record my story for you. Again, my name is Ian. I'm from Western Massachusetts. Thank you for letting me share.